What would you be willing to do in order to better serve your customers and mission? Paloma Soledad, a three-time stage four cancer survivor and the founder of Lux Care, is making some big changes in her business to help women going through medical treatments feel more like themselves and less like a patient. In this interview, she shares the careful details and the entrepreneurial journey that has gone into creating Lux Care's stylish and medically accessible clothing. So keep listening to hear how Paloma knew it was time for a rebrand in order to better fit her customers, how her lifestyle and mindset had to shift to go from making everything herself to producing at a factory, and the time she compromised on one of her values in order to better serve Lux Care's mission. Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. Welcome, Paloma.
Thank you, Allison, for having me.
Yeah, so excited. So I know before you started Lux Care, helping others in their healing, the brand really started out of your own healing journey. Can you share a bit more about that experience and how it affected the brand you've created?
Yeah, it was inspired by, I was a stage four, three-time cancer survivor. Well, I guess I still am, but I have been no evidence of disease for 6 years, so that's great.
Yay.
And I was affected by the immunotherapy trial so intensely that the side effects changed my body. I couldn't wear my regular clothing. And during that time, I would kind of cobble together items that were, some were maternity clothing that my friend gave me, and just whatever I could use or make to have that experience be a little bit better. And I started searching into adaptive wear, medically accessible adaptive wear, and I realized that there was nothing available out there for what I was going through that I would consider stylish, well-made, and adaptable for all types of situations that I was facing. So, like any other designer, I just started designing one night. Actually, I did it laying in bed right before a surgery because, of course, you can't sleep that night. And I came up with all of my designs that evening. And then I've just been working on them ever since, fine-tuning.
Wow. Yeah, so what was it about the clothing that was in your wardrobe at the time, or some of these other, kind of the minimal options available from other brands that really weren't working for you in that time?
So what the side effects ended up doing was I had over 40 pounds of lymph fluid that was not circulating properly. So swelling, I had my abdomen was like 7 months pregnant. So of course I couldn't wear my clothing because as a fashion designer and thrifter, I would always take my clothing in, make it really form-fitting, as well as I loved wools and things that weren't soft and forgiving. So the garments that I had didn't fit me. And when I was started to search adaptive clothing at that time, the garments that were available were only for one situation. So it would be like port access, but I would have a zipper. And it would be made out of a synthetic fabric and super ugly. And it was something that I would never, ever wear. But also, so it's like that stylish component, but I felt like garments should be used for multiple situations. Like if you're going to make that purchase, you should not only feel stylish in it and be able to use it for one action, say, medical port access, but also make it scan friendly, make it eco-conscious fabrics for sensitive skin, things like that. So I like to make clothing that's timeless, so you can kind of just keep it as a staple in your closet. And that's what I applied to this line of adaptive wear.
Yeah, those are such like important points where, and I agree, it's like with anything, I feel like nobody likes to have to change outfits all the time, you know? That's why we have so much marketing around like day to night, or, you know, it's like multifunctional or reversible. Like, we all love that. And so to make something that you can only wear for one situation, it's like, well, what if you need a different type of treatment, you know? Or what if you just don't want to have to like change five outfits that day, depending on what you're doing? That makes a whole lot of sense to combine these different features and make them as like comfortable and work for really whatever activities might come up during the day.
Yeah. And obviously, like, have something that is cozy so you can just lounge at home, something that is stylish enough to where you could wear it to work, wear it to school, you feel cool and like streetwear kind of. And then when you go to the doctor's visits, you can access your ports, you can access your veins on your sleeves. They're wide openings, so it's easy to get into. They camouflage any body changes, post-surgical drains. They have built-in bralettes or modesty panels in the front. And like my hoodie, you know, you can take a nap in it. It's cozy. It's got glovelets. So I was just trying to think, oh yeah. And of course, there's no plastic or metal. So all my accessories and all my clothing doesn't contain plastic or metal on purpose. It's all designed to have panels that move rather than, like I was saying, a zipper. Because I had to go into a CT scan at one point once a week. And if you can leave your clothing on during a scan, it reduces so much of the anxiety, what they call scanxiety. You don't have to change into a robe. You don't feel naked, vulnerable, cold. It's like a little, just another tool, right, to empower you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you bring up there is really important where, you know, you'd think, oh, okay, clothes on the surface seem maybe a little superficial, but our clothes really affect how we feel about ourselves and, you know, physically how we feel as well. And so to create, have kind of that personal environment where you aren't cold, you aren't having to change, you aren't having to put something on, you know, a hospital gown or something that is definitely makes you feel like a patient, you know, that I bet is super comforting.
Yeah, that's really the basis of what I'm doing, is I'd like to change the outpatient experience and eventually the outcomes of being a patient. So a lot of times you're going through these medical treatments, you lose who you are, you lose your hair, you have all of these surgeries. Your physical appearance changes so dramatically that you don't recognize yourself, let alone there's the hospital bills or the fear, you know, dying, everything like that. And would having clothing, this is like my mission, clothing that makes you feel more like yourself, which is like, you know, the basis, one of our basic needs is clothing. But when you're sick, you kind of just crawl into yourself and you go, oh, I just want to be comfortable. I'm just going to wear the sweats and I'm just going to wear the big t-shirt. And then you realize you're losing yourself so much more. I want to build this brand as a go-to for people dealing with these medical treatments to be able to shop just like we do for maternity wear. It's like, this is the situation. These are the garments that help you feel better.
Yeah. And your clothes are, you know, like you said, made super specifically for the different medical situations and treatments that somebody might be going through, but they can be worn outside of that as well. You know, they don't scream patient or hospital at all. They look cool and stylish. So that I feel like is it just a great way where you're providing the care needed while they're a patient, but then they also have this piece that can last in their wardrobes after they've recovered.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's really what my goal is, that these pieces feel familiar. and they don't scream patient medical treatments, and you can fall in love with them. Just like some of the maternity clothes that my friends gave me. I was like, this is the most comfortable thing. I'm just going to keep wearing these. And I know the same story for them after they give birth, they fall in love with a piece. So why can't I make clothing like that? You know, if it's the perfect hoodie, then keep wearing it. You know, you don't need to like burn it as a final straw in the end of your treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. And when it's cozy and made to fit well and made to last, you don't want to burn it either. It doesn't have that like negative, I'm finally done with this.
And I wanted it to be universal. A lot of my customers aren't dealing with treatments. They just want to be cozy. So I have friends who have to work from home, or they travel a lot, or I know other people who buy it because they're going through menopause and they don't want tight clothing. They want organic fibers, something soft. It's obviously the market is huge. And then of course there's a UPF hoodie. So the UPF hoodie is sun safe. So the fabric is naturally sun safe rather than being chemical dipped or synthetic. And that's a cancer prevention. Anybody can wear it, but it's really helpful when you are going through treatment. You're more susceptible to getting melanoma from the side effects of the drugs and just for having cancer in general. So the hoodie is cute, but it's like a rescue piece if your sunblock runs out or if you just need to stay away from the sun. It's good for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've mentioned it a little bit with like the natural fibers and not having, you know, chemicals in the clothing, but are there any other values or things that are important to LuxCare that you include in the clothes they make?
I believe in sustainability and making garments that last. I grew up in Hawaii and there's limited resources to a family that was artists, and we didn't have a lot. So we were always making our own, fixing. My mom made all our clothes. I've always fixed my clothes and made them last. So I believe that is the foundation of what I want to do for my company, or what I am doing for my company, is finding very soft, very high quality fabrics that are sustainable, that are chemical free. So it's like you start with that. And then you make a garment that is functional and also made really well, so it lasts. And then, of course, I'm doing small batch production in the United States. So it's easy to pivot and easy to remain sustainable.
That's amazing. Yeah, there's so many like different directions that brands can take in terms of like their values and even kind of within sustainability. But it sounds like those like safe and natural fabrics are, and then the small batch is really the way that you are bringing that sustainable value into how you run LuxCare. Is that right?
Definitely. And when you start your own brand, you know, you can have these lofty ideas of, I want to be like perfect in every single sense, but you do what you can in the beginning, and then you continue to have that as a goal.
Have you ever faced like a difficult decision in regards to like following those values or in regards to your goals where you had to decide like, am I going to compromise on this or not?
That's funny. I told myself no bamboo, because that's greenwashing. And then people love bamboo and it's really, really soft. And so I was able to find sustainably made bamboo fabrics. So I have introduced bamboo into my production. That was really hard for me, actually.
What, just maybe for those listening who don't quite understand like the nuance of bamboo and its sustainability credentials, what were your hesitations with using bamboo?
Well, like bamboo is really easy to grow, but then the manufacturing into a fabric process can be a little bit intense. And then I believe that it doesn't biodegrade. So, and then a lot of times there's chemicals used in that manufacturing process, but I was able to find some that are certified chemical free, and it's just really, really soft. So I want to start using more Tencel and Modell, But right now the bamboo is lovely and I want this to be patient centered. You know, make sure that my clients feel like they are in the most loving hug possible. And it turned out that, like, right now it's bamboo. The price points are a little bit less than some of the other fabrics that I would like to use. But when people are going through treatments, medical bills pile up. And I, even though my prices are a little bit higher, it is a nod to luxury, but I can't make them too high and completely unobtainable.
Yeah. So was bamboo something that your customers were directly asking for, or were they just asking for the softer fabrics and bamboo fit the bill the best?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. There was people who were like, this is real, you know, this fabric is really nice. What is this? I'm like, okay. And then also it fit the bill. You know, my fabric suppliers had some really lovely options, especially when I was looking into fleece. And we did a survey, and the number one priority for my customers is comfort and super soft fabrics. So I really had to listen to them with that and kind of put my own priorities aside for now.
Interesting. So yeah, I feel like with any brand, there's kind of a lot of the values are led by, like, the founder, you know, you as the designer, what do you care about and want to put forth in the world? But then also, you know, so much of it is driven by the customer as well. What are some of the things that, like, from, you know, that was a very customer driven, it sounds like, decision. What are some of the things where your customers haven't necessarily asked for it, but it's important to you that, you know, your designs or your business is run in this way?
I would say the sewing techniques. I'm really trying to hold on to quality sewing. People tell me, oh, no one cares anymore, no one notices, but I do. And I want things, you know, my garment to be representative of those values of finely made garment. Obviously, one day I can continue to make the garments even better. But right now, that's one thing that I'm really trying to hold on to.
Yeah. So, like, can you give an example of that? Like, what is a certain construction or a certain garment where you're like, no, I want to sew it this way, even though maybe you've gotten pushback or it's the more difficult thing.
A great example is the hood on my hoodie. The hood on my hoodie is kind of taken from a Victorian cape hood that is big enough for a full head of hair if you have it. It pulls down far enough so when it's raining, your glasses don't get wet. And like I said, you can take a nap in it. So it does come down to your nose if you want to take a nap in it. And it's cut in a way that is very elegant. And I've had pushback from, thank you, from the sewing factory. Like, oh, you could just turn this edge in. And it's like, you'll lose all the nuance. It has to have a facing. And I won't budge on that.
To give it the weight and the structure and the drama.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. People always go, I've never seen a hood like this. So that's important. I want to keep that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just talking to somebody the other day about, you know, this very type of thing where there's like the basic way you can sew a garment. And then there's, you know, anything kind of beyond that or different than that is more expensive, either to sew or it uses more fabric. But it's those little details that make it so much more unique. And so it's like balancing the which of these details is going to be worth the extra cost. And, you know, what does the customer care about? Does it make the piece way more unique or way more functional for these different things? And yeah, it's going to be a little more expensive, but like that's what makes it different than every other cheap basic that's out there.
Definitely. And like my pockets are extra long, so your cell phone doesn't fall out. And as a woman, I know you know.
Yep.
And then also like a built-in bralette. That's important because then you don't have to wear a bra. You can wear it into a scan. It's super comfortable. Things like that make the garment more expensive. But my whole philosophy is you're going through what could be potentially the worst time of your life. So why shouldn't you have the best? Why shouldn't you have all of these little details to make your life a little easier and to really feel like you're heard and you're seen?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody yeah. understands what you're going through. And I think those little details really help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I know at the moment you are a little bit at a turning point in your brand with a lot of exciting things in the works. What are some of these changes that you're making?
There are, I call them an evolution, right? I think we were saying before you hit record, iteration. Mm-hmm. It's like life is a series of iterations. And I love that idea that each thing is an improvement on the last, especially as an entrepreneur, instead of holding on to like, oh no, this isn't perfect, I can't launch or something like that. We will keep refining and we will keep making things better. And just moving forward is important. So when I started this brand, I was 5 years of cancer treatment. So that was pretty crazy. And then going through COVID. So this was kind of my COVID project. I was working on that while everybody was hunkering down. And then before that, I was a sustainable, one-of-a-kind kind of fashion designer. Everything I made was from, there's a company in New York called Fab Scrap. And they...
I bought from them before.
Yeah, exactly. They're so wonderful. So they source all their materials from New York fashion houses that have 1, 2, 5, 10, 7 yards, whatever it is, that they would normally throw away because it's too small for mass production. But they are gorgeous silks and just the most amazing fabrics. So all of my clothing prior to this, my personal line, was made out of these materials and then paired with early 1900s handmade crochet that I would collect from antique stores, custom dye myself, and then make into beautiful dresses and blouses. So that's always, and I would just sell straight to my customer from my showroom in Brooklyn. And so that's more of an artist rather than an entrepreneur. So when I started this journey, it was like, whoa, what is being an entrepreneur? What are all these things? How are running a real business? And one of the main things was, what am I going to call my company? Well, it was, up until recently, Chrysalis Couture, because I thought that encapsulated beautifully what I was trying to do. And I spelled it with K's. I thought that was creative. I thought I could own that trademark. Well, little did I know, that's not how trademarks work. So, and people couldn't spell it. People couldn't remember it. People couldn't say it. And I realized I better change that right now before I moved into any more growth with the company. So it's a rebrand. It's an evolution. And so Lux Care Clothing is what I'm calling myself now. But my heart is always Chrysalis Couture. But Lux Care is nice because it's a little bit more broad and it explains exactly what I'm offering. And it's not just care for yourself, care for cancer patients, but it's care for your loved ones. So when people are going through these treatments, their loved ones, they just want to desperately help. What can they do? And my garments are the perfect gift because they're meaningful, they're functional, they're gorgeous, and they really create a bond between people when you wear them and you catch your reflection in a store window. It puts a little pep in your step and you think about the person who gave it to you and you get the warm fuzzies. And I believe that all of that contributes to a better healing, a better self-image, and more positivity throughout your treatment journey.
Yeah, the community of it, where it's like you have the people around you who care about you and are going to support you through this hard time.
Yes, definitely. So Lux Care is, I'm really excited about it. And with everything, I want it to be thoughtful and intentional. So for instance, all the hang tags, all the labels, they all have quotes from people who have really been through the ringer and, like I say, stared death in the face. and who have a really positive outlook on life, gratitude, and message. And each one, if it's maybe like stage four thrivers, there's a few of those who have been dealing with cancer for years. One of them, Brittany, she is a stage four thriver. She got cancer at 18. They told her she was too young to have cancer. They didn't listen to her. And she was stage four by the time they her treatment. And she's had it for 10 years and she's been thriving the whole time. And she's got an amazing outlook on life. And it's really lovely to be able to have her quote on my size small. So each size has a different quote. Each hang tag has something inspiring.
Yeah, you've really thought through not only like all the details of the clothing, but like of, you know, what can we surround these women with to help them in this time? You know, like I said, even the little details of the hang tag and the whole experience. So I love that you've put like all that thought and care into each element and each kind of interaction with your brand. That's really special.
Yeah, I want it to feel inspiring in every single little tiny corner. So when you look at that tag on the back of your neck that normally is itchy or you just don't even think about it, I have really, really soft tags. And underneath it, you lift it up and there's something inspiring for you to just kind of remember that you're not alone, which is important to me.
Yeah, so cool. So beyond the name change, are there any other things that you're working on, maybe on the business side or production side, like along with this rebrand?
Yes. Up until this point, I have been hand making all the garments myself.
Wow.
This, yes, it's been.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, but it has been, I mean, obviously a labor of love. I've been sewing since I got my first sewing machine. It was a hand crank vintage sewing machine at 4 years old. My mom bought it from a sailor off the wanted ad in the back of the newspaper. So I didn't go to school for a fashion design or anything. I've taught myself everything. I worked in the film industry. I worked on this movie called Coraline and it's stop motion. And it really taught me how to hone my just eye for detail and ability to think outside the box and ability to problem solve. And so all of that is what I put into my sewing techniques. So each garment has been sewn by me. And at the same time, it's enabled me to learn, get feedback, slightly change things, figure out how I want to make it even better. So that I think keeping it close is really important in the beginning. You don't just have like a ton of stock that you don't know what to do with or you wish you had made differently.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm moving into small batch production, like I mentioned, locally in the United States. And that'll be really nice because when I get an order, I don't have to stop and make it. You know, I can just go and pack it. But so that's kind of exciting at this point. And then, of course, reworking all the designs and making them even better.
Yeah. Yeah, that is exciting. And it's a big shift and lots of things that will, it sounds like, really set you up to be able to grow more from here. You know, having to spend as much time on the actual making of the product, you have more time to grow other aspects of the business.
Definitely. I was going to say, it's very hard, though, to break free of like my insane eye for detail. I think that being able to go, this hem isn't perfect. That is something that I am learning to kind of give away.
No, I totally get it. I've in my business, as you know, like been making some changes as well. And instead of like sewing all the fit samples myself, I'm now working with several very skilled sample makers. And it's not that like their work wasn't as good as what I wanted, but it was more just like the mental, like, let it go. I don't need to do it all myself. We can work through processes and find people that can do it to the level of quality that's needed. I'm not the only one who can do this. And, you know, that's almost like the mental shift of like letting that go, where it's, I'm not the only one who can do this. You know, it can be hard to get over. I think, you know, whether it's hiring the first employee for a brand or moving from producing everything yourself to working with a factory, there's all the logistic challenges, but there's also the mental like shifts that have to happen in order to go through with that change. And it's not always easy.
Definitely that control. Yes, I agree with you 100%. But because I know you and I both have such high standards, even if we are okay with something being not quite as good as we're doing, no one else will notice because it'll still be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe, like have somebody else look at, you know, for if you need the confirmation, like put two things side by side and be like, here, what do you notice, you know, and see if anyone can actually tell.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, how did you know it was time for this rebrand and these changes? Like what prompted making all these shifts in both production and in the name?
It was just that whole experience of people mispronouncing it or not being able to find it, that I just knew I had to dig my heels in and make that change, like rip off that Band-Aid. It's really funny, though, when you start to try to find a new name in this era of just everybody's making a product, all the names have been taken. I was really happy to, I actually, LuxCare came from two other names and I had them side by side to try to figure out which I liked better. And I dropped words from both of them and just combined what I thought was important, the luxury and the care.
Yeah. And it's easy to spell and easy to pronounce. Like, you know, on a podcast, I would know how to spell it and what to search for.
Yes, SEO friendly.
Yep. I wish I had thought more about that when I started my business as well, because I just went with my name because I couldn't decide on a name, a different name. And my name, both first and last, are not easy to spell, or last name not even easy to pronounce. So I get the challenges there.
Yeah, I wish, obviously, I would say if anybody wants advice, go to business school. Like art school's fun. Or why don't all the art schools have business classes? And why don't they teach things like this? Like trademark and naming a business.
Yeah, the university I went to, I was in their fashion design program, but then after I left, several years after I graduated, they now have a fashion business and entrepreneurship program, which is kind of like half in the business school and half in the design school. I was like, that would have been really useful if they had that when I went.
Definitely.
So what is your background? I know you said you've been sewing since you were really little, and your mom would sew all your clothes, and you... Sounds like you've had some sort of your own line, or at least been making things for yourself for many years. Did you go to design school or anything?
Well, I always had the love of costume making. So I've been making these epic costumes my whole life. And that was just a constant. So I've always been sewing and making. But for some reason, I didn't even think about going to fashion design school or even costuming. I went into school at the California Institute of the Arts for photography back when we were using negatives and dark rooms, which was very cool and very fun. But that was art school, and that was like truly an art school. And it was partway, I think, after the first year, I realized it was the ladies in the photographs that I wanted to dress rather than taking the photographs. But I would have lost my scholarship if I had changed my majors. So I just took a bunch of independent studies and learned costuming kind of just here and there. And then when I graduated, I worked for a company called Cinema Secrets in Hollywood, and I designed and helped run the costume making. It was those really kind of fancy bag costumes for Halloween costumes. So I designed those and then learned how to do production there. And then I went into the movie industry, and I would take odd jobs here and there, making costumes. Then I moved to Oregon and I worked on Coraline. And during that, I was really into corsetry. So when I was done with Coraline, I started my own line of one-of-a-kind corsets that were basically just like art pieces that were just as beautiful on the inside as they were on the outside. And I would use antique hardware on them and all different types of things. And then when, kind of a long story, but I was going to go camping, and in the newspaper, I saw an ad for Portland Fashion Week. And it was in 1 hour, there was a meeting and you could apply to be in Portland Fashion Week. So I went there my corsets. I packed up all my corsets. I went there and they said, these are amazing. If you can make all the clothing that is worn under the corsets, you can be in our show. And so I had a month and I made all the clothes and I made hats and gloves and all kinds of fabulous things. And I kind of blew their mind and it was really fun. And I didn't realize it was a competition and I won. So I put my big toe in the clothing part of the design world rather than just corsetry. And then when I moved to New York City, and when I was first diagnosed, I spent a couple months in bed, and my partner at the time encouraged me to just sit and draw all the things that I've always wanted to make. And that was my line of dresses and blouses with the handmade crochet. And at that point, my friends were having babies and I was going through treatments, and I realized big and flowy, you know, we can't always wear a corset.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my silhouette.
When you said like all your clothing was fitted, like you weren't exaggerating. Like if you went from like corset, historical corset to needing something a little bit more flowy and flexible, that's a big shift in the clothing you had.
Definitely. And I was really into corset belts.
Mm-hmm.
And just like cinching. Oh, because you throw a corset belt on a big blousy dress that, you know, doesn't fit right, and it looks amazing. So I have gone through quite a few phases in my personal style and design as well.
Yeah. Yeah. How is that? Like, was that difficult to kind of change your wardrobe based on like what was going on? Or was it, did it feel like a natural shift where it felt comfortable and right for your style? I guess, did it feel like you at each of these stages?
Well, what feels like you, right? Like, who are we? What are we? I think with each iteration is kind of just a little bit of a shift. So let me just tell you, I've got a closet full of really cool, weird, handmade Victorian clothing that I don't know if I'll ever use or wear or be able to get rid of. But I did used to wear like clothing from the 1800s. At times. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't want that part of myself to go away totally. But comfortable. I mean, we all went through COVID and there's like a comfort factor. I mean, when we were younger, we would just buy shoes that didn't fit and just jam your foot into them. Can't deal with that anymore, right? I will throw a corset on, but I'm so excited to take it off at the end of it. So I go comfort mostly on a work day. It's comfort, but every once in a while, I still have to dress up and tap into the old Paloma.
Mm-hmm. It has I love kind of like combining like in clothing two aesthetics or two things that normally wouldn't go together. So you have my wheels turning of like, could you make a comfy like sweatshirt corset where like obviously it wouldn't be quite the same as, you know, and the same feel as a traditional corset, but like, could you get the styling of that in the comfort or the fabrics of something else?
I can possibly answer that a little bit. I did do a line of what I would call summer corsets, and they were with anti-crochet and really lightweight, breathable. And I would use spiral steel boning, which holds its shape, but moves really well because regular steel boning is too rigid and plastic boning is just worthless. So the spiral steel boning keeps things comfortable, and you could put just enough here and there to kind of keep it shape, because you need it to like hold itself. And then you don't always have, I always say, like, you don't always have to pull it that tight.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a little.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that about like kind of your whole background in fashion and film too, that led to the brand you have now.
Yeah. It's been a pretty fun, exciting career of just going from one interesting thing to the next and using all of that knowledge. I think that's why I'm so passionate about LuxCare, is being able to have had all of these different experiences from my past and being able to apply them to problem solve, really. It's like my friends call me the female MacGyver, because I just love to problem solve and I love making things out of nothing or like what you wouldn't expect. So being able to apply that to these treatment garments has been really fun, just as far as the problem solving aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about clothes as well, is kind of the engineering, the problem solving, kind of the nerd side of fashion. Not as much what it looks like, but kind of that, but more like, how do we make this in the best quality? How do we make it functional? How does the physics of the garment work? You know, and how does it interact with the body or with movement? And it's super fascinating.
Yeah. And you're really good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's like there's a technical artistry and care that is involved. And you apply all those things. Obviously, the technical, you're super good at, but you care enough to try to understand, well, what is this weird thing that somebody's asking for? And how can I make that work, rather than just watering it down and going, oh no, this is good enough. It's like, you want to follow.
This is unusual. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what's special, I think, about working with the brands that I work with too, like yours, is that it's not just, oh, let's make pretty clothes. It's not just the art of the design. It's very functional for a unique purpose or a unique person, a unique customer. And so there is that problem solving where you have to bring all these things together and understand, like, put yourself in the customer's shoes. Like, how is it going to be worn? And it is, I think that's the fun part. And that's the cool thing about interviewing different brands on this podcast, is hearing what are all those elements that they're combining together and to create and problem solve for this unique purpose for these clothing.
Definitely. And your podcasts are really great. I've listened to quite a few of them, and it is very fascinating to hear everybody's little reasons why they're making their brand and how they're building it and those little problem solving aspects of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of fun. I'm glad you enjoy listening to them. So yeah, looking ahead now for LuxCare, like what is the newest problem you're solving, or, you know, where are you going from here?
Gosh, that's a good question. Each little thing is its new problem to solve. I think the most exciting part is enjoying the journey. When I first started, it was just like a scared animal in the corner going, what am I doing? And I'm finally
even though you'd had brands before.
Yeah, but starting something new, there was a lot of naysayers, and there was a lot of people who really got it. So it was kind of an interesting combination. But in the beginning, it was like people saying, you know, somebody's just going to get better. They don't really care. They can cut a hole in their pants or whatever for their catheter, you know, whatever it was. It was trying to prove that, no, this is a valuable niche in the market that isn't being addressed. And it's important that this segment of people really do feel heard. So that's as far as problem solving. That was a big one. I heard this really amazing quote, Brian Eno. He said, think gardening, not architecture. Plant things and see how they grow. Don't constrain yourself by trying to solve every detail. And that's something really important for me because I do love gardening. So it's like I'm putting that into my business. I don't have to micromanage. I don't have to solve every problem. I just have to gather all the little aspects that make this wonderful and see how they evolve. And so it's just applying that to starting to hire people or working with factories. Anyways, existence.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I hadn't heard that before. Yeah, so true. So in kind of moving beyond doing everything yourself, you know, we talked about how that can be a kind of a challenging mental shift. What has it been like kind of on the external, like logistics side of transitioning to small batch production versus making everything yourself?
Well, finding people that you can trust and who align with your vision. What I'm doing is so meaningful to me and to my clients that I want to surround myself with people who have the same values. And so that's, it's just a really interesting process. So hiring somebody and realizing they don't get it, they don't care, and then moving past them, cutting your losses, and finding people who really do want to help you push that product to make it better. And, you know, working with the factories, just kind of making sure that they understand your vision and they're not going to water things down. Also, everything takes 3 times as long as you think it might. Being okay with that, my partner, he says, you have a self-imposed time frame. You know, don't get caught up in feeling anxious about this thing not happening fast enough. You can change your time frames, and that's really good.
And your product is pretty seasonless too. Like, it's not like, oh, if you miss this exact date, like you've missed the whole year's worth of selling season.
Yeah, and this is just life. Like, what are we rushing towards? You know, it's death, and I've already been too close to it. So I want to just be as thoughtful in this process as possible and enjoy it. Because when it's over, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. I mean, it's true, though. It's like sometimes there is an important deadline that, like, for whatever reason needs to be met.
But totally.
Oftentimes in businesses, in smaller, more indie fashion brands, it is more the self-imposed deadlines where there isn't as much, like, you know, we're not answering to investors. You know, there's more flexibility where or maybe it's just that there are more value, like the timeline or the deadline is not the only value that's important to us, where we're like, no, I'm not going to push myself too far or push your team too far in order to meet this deadline. If that's going to, you know, ruin the enjoyment, like you said, or ruin the relationship in the meantime. Like, there are these other things that are important that we need to care for ourselves as business owners as well in the whole process.
Yeah, and I'm sure the future will hold something different. But instead of rushing towards that and creating more anxiety, I just needed to, like, slow down, enjoy it, and just build this the way it needs to be built. And then in the future, there will be deadlines and there will be investors or there will be all these things that I'm going to be rushing towards. But for now, I think it's just build what you can. And, you know, this is all I do 24/7. I am doing this all the time. I mean, I know people talk about hobbies. This is one of my hobbies, and business and everything. I just enjoy it. I try to constantly remind myself of that, especially, like, I love listening to people who have huge companies and all these different podcasts while I work. And one thing that is interesting thread through people who have really, really succeeded and sold their businesses, they say that that actually isn't as fun as the building process. So I'm trying to just enjoy that process.
Yeah. Yeah. Be thankful for the present and enjoy what at each stage of the growth.
Definitely.
So what is one thing you're most proud of so far in running your brand?
teaching myself how to be a businesswoman. I think it's like putting myself basically through business school, boots on the ground. I'm very proud of that. Was severely dyslexic as a child, and breaking through that and really becoming my own best supporter, I guess you could say, has been really nice. So learning, growing, and then just making connections with this community. When I went through my own cancer treatments, I was very isolated. I wasn't on Instagram. I didn't reach out to community. I wasn't in any organizations. And it was isolating and kind of sad as I look back at it. So just, I am so proud to be able to serve a community that oftentimes doesn't feel heard, like the thriving community. So that's the stage four thrivers who are just living with cancer and having to get treatments every 3 weeks. Being able to offer them a garment that is really beautiful. I had my first Australian sale and she replied back and said, I went to treatment this week and I felt stylish and I didn't think those were two things that would ever come together. So that things like that, it's those moments that just make my heart explode. And that's what drives me forward, is just being able to offer something to somebody when they're down that will make them feel better.
Yeah, that's so special. Well, I have one more question for you, Paloma, that I ask everyone at the end of the interview. If you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Well, as we talked about, you know, it's more than clothing. So I would say empowerment through clothing and the idea that you're not alone, and also being able to create a connection. So when somebody needs a thoughtful, meaningful gift, there's something out there that they can give their loved one and support them through treatment.
Yeah. So special. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I learned more about your background that I didn't know. And it's so fun to hear about the rebrand and the things going on in your business and how you're continuing this mission of really making women feel more like themselves while they're going through this. Where can people find more about Lux Care online?
Well, our website is luxcare-clothing, spelled L-U-X-C-A-R-E. And our Instagram and social media handles is luxcareclothing without the dash. And then tomorrow we are, I guess this will be in the future, but I am opening, helping to open and fill with my products St. Luke's new spa and cancer boutique. So there are brick and mortar shops that are carrying my headscarves currently, but this is really exciting because it'll have my clothing as well. So stay tuned. So there's...
Yeah, so that would be opening February 20th. In what city?
That is Pennsylvania.
Okay, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Cool. I will put links to all those places in the show notes so people can definitely check out your clothes and maybe get one for themselves or a loved one.
Thank you so much
for joining me today.
Thank you. And thanks for having this great podcast.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.